love you.
Okay, welcome back to the broadcast. Here we see Public Citizen launches CAFTA damage report dated today, October 5th. How did it happen that the Central American Free Trade Agreement, CAFTA, an anti-worker, anti-environment pact that your impressive citizen activism had beaten to an 18-month standstill, suddenly passed the House of Representatives 217 to 215 on July 27th, despite the corporations and Bush administration's extreme efforts? One vote cast differently would have sunk CAFTA. And actually, it should have been a two-thirds vote, listeners, the way these things are in Congress, in my thoughts, not majority. One vote cast differently would have sunk CAFTA. Public Citizens Global Trade Watch, that's Public Citizens Global Trade Watch, is investigating how the public was betrayed and what the cost will be for all of us with our new CAFTA Damage Report series. And they say, take action, contact your congressman with your disappointment over CAFTA's passage. And we'll have more information on this on the website. I'll forward it to Dennis, and we'll have more information on that. You know, FTAA is on the near horizon, or sunset. You know, to many of us, these are done deals already underway, under implementation. And this is the point. This is why the sheer increase of numbers is vital to getting things done. We've got to make an increase in numbers. There's no other way around it. Let's go to John in New York. John, welcome to the broadcast.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
I just wanted to bring up something I'm a little concerned about because I had heard something from a on today's show, on your show, a guy from Oklahoma had mentioned about some of the refugees, well, not refugees, citizens from Louisiana were supposed to have been, after Katrina, sent to Oklahoma and stuff like that, and they weren't sent there?
Yes.
Well, I'm a little concerned about that because I heard on a show, one of the talk shows, about 3 or 4 weeks after Katrina, there was a woman on talking, and she was in the know, just the way she talked, like she knew really what she was talking about.
Uh-huh.
She was mentioning on another show, it beats me, I can't remember which one it was, that she was from Minnesota, and they were notified 2 weeks before that they were going to receive approximately, I'm not sure what the number, I think it's 3,000 people. They set up camp, they set up tents, they did stuff, and after 2 weeks, they were notified that people weren't coming. And when they asked, and she said when they inquired as to where they were going, they wouldn't tell them.
Well, see,
now,
this
is a double repeat.
This is my concern as well. Where did all these people go?
Exactly. Exactly.
And the point is, I'm sure there were people that said they wanted to know where they were going before they boarded a bus or a plane.
I mean, this is like the scenario of 9/11. You know, like they say, if we give them the benefit of the doubt. If the planes didn't crash into the towers or whatever, where do the people go? The same thing. It's a repeat.
The Pentagon plane.
Right.
Yeah.
Where did the people go?
Yep. And there is the extreme need to increase our numbers.
So I'm like asking, you know, if anybody's out there, it's kind of late on your show right now, or maybe you could even bring that up on a later show and just ask the callers a few times during the day. If people from any other states know anything about this or know that they were supposed to get people during this time and found out that they weren't coming, I'm just curious to how many states.
I'm more curious if the
government, the local government, the governor and the people in charge of the counties and stuff like that, I mean, they call them a different name down there, but up here in New York they're called counties, the mayors and stuff, if they know where all their citizens are.
Well, John, you're doing it right now. We need to know what happened to all these people.
I mean, it's a good deal here for American Free Press to check on something like this. You know,
absolutely.
Check and find out if they're doing their homework. You know, do they have a count on these people?
Absolutely.
I mean, they must know through a computer if they're alive and they're around. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, I think the number was 500 places they were supposed to be dispersed to. Now, here's two big ones. Now, all of a sudden, here's the second time I'm hearing that they were supposed to get people. And they weren't. They didn't show up, and they don't know where they went.
Yeah, I
mean, is it genocide already? Is it starting? You know,
I share your concern, and I'm afraid your concern may be warranted, as mine is too.
But I would like, you know, any listeners out there that know anything from other states, and even the guy from Oklahoma, if he could find information, especially like people in, when we've got people that call up some of the talk shows who are from Louisiana. Maybe if there's a way, if they got their phones together and whatever, they could find out exactly what kind of headcount, you know, what kind of check on where all their citizens are. I mean, they're dispersed all over the United States. They
We need to have an accounting for where everyone went.
You know, I just hope there's enough time, because
yes,
if this thing comes up with the flu or martial law and the whole nine yards, we're never going to know. Not that we're ever going to know anyway.
Well,
I'm afraid of that also. I don't even know if we're ever going to know.
That's the game that's being played on us.
You know, and they've never come up with a body count.
Right.
An accurate body count, and I wouldn't believe it anyway.
Well, listen, John, I appreciate your concern, and I understand your concern is the same as many of the listeners. We need to have an accounting for where these evacuees went.
But, I mean, this is the second time I'm hearing this, and I thought the first time, I said, well, it's kind of cold. I mean, I know it's the fact that it was Minnesota, because I said to myself, wow, you know, to go from a warm climate to there and spend the winter, and I'm not mistaken, I think the woman on the that was on the show had mentioned about that also. But, I mean, 5,000 people that didn't show up, and they were told they were going to get them, and they didn't. And after 2 weeks, you know, they didn't show up, and they wouldn't tell them where they went. Now I'm hearing it again in Oklahoma. Where else? You know, what other states? If anybody knows, you know, call up some of these talk shows, and I hope some of the other talk show listeners would bring up the subject, too.
Yes.
Because I think we got a whole can of beans. I mean, a whole can of worms here.
Thank you, John.
Okay, great.
I appreciate your concern. Thank you. That's very, very relevant information and thought. Where did everyone go? Where are they now? We need an accounting for where they went, because someday we may have to go, and that wouldn't be right, would it, to not know where you went, and people will be concerned about you and your welfare and well-being. Tim in Texas, welcome.
Hey, buddy.
Yes.
And we kind of like what we were talking about last night, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Small world. When I first moved to Tennessee and ended up in Nashville, I moved to Dixon. And small world to hear somebody listening to you in Dixon. That's really cool. Howdy, Dixon from South Texas. I was there, but I had enough of Nashville and decided to come back. And as for the guy listening from Austin, over here in Bastrop County, they have the COPS, what they're called. It's called Citizens on Patrol. They have, I was sitting in a Chinese restaurant a few months ago, and in waddles a couple of fat pig-looking people, looked like they couldn't run 50 yards without having a heart attack. They had on not complete uniforms, but it was like a white shirt instead of the official tan uniform. Had patches on them, carrying a gun, driving their own car. When I went outside, it was had COP on the side of it, and it was Citizens on Patrol car, so they have their own cars and everything over here.
Well, there it is.
And that just, you know, it just struck me as the brown shirts. That's what they are.
And they were carrying weapons.
Oh, yeah, doing it for free, too.
Yeah, well, that just catalyzes everything, doesn't it?
Yeah, and these people, these two guys, you wouldn't have believed, Chris. A 50-yard sprint would have given both of them a heart attack. I mean, they were so fat pigs.
Well, you know, you see them in those armored vehicles down in Katrina-ravaged areas driving these armored rigs and puffed-up faces and all.
You know, they probably couldn't pass a physical to get on the sheriff's department, but the sheriff's department will sure give them a car and a badge and a gun. And
well, the point is they bring the lowlifes into police departments that don't think straight. They bring the country's worst. It could be former convicts in the police department someday, if not even right now.
Yeah, who knows?
So it's that's relevant information, COPS, Citizens on Patrol.
Yep, that's what they call it down here.
Thank you, Tim.
Okay, buddy, God
appreciate
bless
you. God bless you. Thank you. Oh, yes. Well, it's 2005. It's all this is relevant to what's been going on for the last 50, 60 years. It's all relevant, listeners. It's when you see the progressional directions. A perfect example is the Passover of the Panama Canal by Jimmy Carter in 1977. What do we have now? Chinese ownership by Hutchison Wenpa and a 50-year lease of the Panama Canal. We have products made in communist China on our shelves today. If ever you buy anything mail order, plan on 90% of it coming from communist China. Anything that is advertised on the television, advertising channels, the grass samurai is one thing that I think about, that string trimmer attachment. You better believe that's made in communist China. So we have all these situations and scenarios at us right now. It's not to be unexpected by me in 2005. The concern that I have is that the sheer number of people waking up is vital. Let's move to another caller. Hello, Will. How are you today?
Very good, Chris, and thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
Going back to this reserve officer program and where that direction began, there was a recent press release issued by Governor Matt Blunt here in Missouri, and there was a discussion in regards to volunteers going to Katrina and Rita and whatnot. But if you read, you know, as we learn to research and learn to pick up on discernment and comprehension, the text of the article revealed that these people were not actually volunteers, but what they were doing was they were taking paid leave and going down there. So they can show up in the press, they can show up in discussion as volunteers, and boy, look at all the volunteers we got turned out for this thing. But what this, in my opinion, is multi-jurisdictional task forcing, where we can take people from a number of states and various agencies and call them volunteers and load them up on trucks and vans and buses and transport them to various critical areas where they then come out as volunteers. In other words, they don't have any authority, they don't have any responsibility, they don't have any accountability, but yet they're there and they're actually government-paid employees on leave from other posts on these various target sites. And mm-hmm. that idea of blurring the boundaries from one state to the other state is part of this UN blurring of the national boundaries.
Yep.
And the idea here that lies underneath this is establishing this, manifesting this concept that August Comte put out, which was, you know, the humanitarianism, altruism, living for others. And it's this way that we can bring order out of chaos by refocusing our attention away from being paid for something. When you're paid for it, then you're responsible for it. But this takes away that responsibility, mm-hmm. and it encourages, like this COPS program that the gentleman just spoke of, or the reserve officer program.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are good things in there, but it's establishing this process or this program indoctrination where we take someone just for their appearance as a position of authority where there actually may be none.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, good point. Very, very good point. Now, the Department of Peace comes to mind as well, the U.S. Department of Peace, and we're going to get into that some more. That's on our website, by the way, now, too, listeners, the Department of Peace that Linda brought up yesterday. Now, Will, you've been dissecting Agenda 21, correct?
I'm still working on it. I'm not completely finished yet.
What chapter are you on?
Nine, huh?
Okay, so you've covered the first nine chapters?
Well, I wouldn't say I've covered them, Chris, because the way that I'm looking at this is from a word-by-word basis that I'm having real difficulty finding that there's anything verifiable or meaningful that's being stated, and that this is kind of like bulletproof language that in whatever context, in whatever speaker, it only means what it means to the person that is saying it at that time.
That's my feeling as well.
Yeah.
It is an open book on what to do to mankind.
Yeah, in the Black's Law Dictionary, there's a definition for perfect defense. And
mm-hmm.
perfect defense basically is it's just bulletproof. And mm-hmm. I see a lot of this verbiage as being a perfect defense. It can be, it's a chameleon. It can be rolled out for whatever. But you can always fall back on sustainability. You can always fall back on development, economic, environment. Those words are just really meaningless.
Mm-hmm.
So they're defined by the situation. And so as I'm going through it, that's what I'm looking for right now. And when I get done, what I'm hoping to do, and I've already got a pretty good start on it, I'm putting together every definition that I can find in there where they have defined their terms. And then also a list of all the ambiguous terms. And I want to put it two lists, one on the left, one on the right, the things that we can know and the things that can't be known, the things that are objective and the things that are subjective, and the things that are logical and the things that are illogical. And then hopefully I'll be able to start building this matrix down and come to some understanding. But that's where I'm at on that one.
Yeah, well, it's into 13 years of operation and implementation, and that's it's an open book on the human race.
Yeah, and you, on the other earlier comment, you know, we talked about getting the CAFTA through, but you'll notice that Majority Whip Blunt, I believe, has now moved up to Majority Leader.
Uh-huh.
And he was part of the arm twisting. In fact, I think he was principal in the arm twisting. So you can see how the payoffs come in that direction as well.
There you go.
Yes.
Now, we were going to do a show a while back before Katrina hit.
Yes, that was a real can of worms. That was some very important stuff to cover.
It sort of settled down. Maybe we should get together Friday if you're available.
Well, you know, just give me a call off air and we'll talk about it, and I'd be happy to come on anytime.
Let's work on that for Friday, okay?
Sounds good.
Okay, Will.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You know, all this that's going on in many respects, in many arenas, is about control of mankind. And here we are in a sovereign country called Iraq, disarming the population, that was armed very well. Agenda 21B was not being implemented in Iraq, because I was researching it at the time. And now we have what's going on over there. Afghan ambush claims Chelsea soldier from Afghanistan. And that was our reasoning behind September 11, 2001, to go to Afghanistan because of Al-Qaeda. Well, here we see from American Free Press, on the morning of September 11, 2005, New York City Auxiliary Fire Lieutenant Paul Isaac, Jr., asserted yet again that 9/11 was an inside job. Quote, "I know 9/11 was an inside job. The police know it's an inside job. And the firemen know it, too," end quote, says Isaac. So here we are with these Hegelian dialectics being set up at us and on us. And we have this other one with this bird flu pandemic and the possibility of an implementation of martial law. We'll be back to wrap it up with John and Vicki and conclude the broadcast for today, the 5th of October, 2005. Stay with us. Welcome back to the conclusion of the broadcast, listeners. Certainly, we have foreign troops on our soil today as a result of Katrina. Now, I see here from Reuters, dated October 4th, Eurythia told the United Nations on Tuesday it could no longer fly helicopters over its territory to resupply peacekeepers stationed there after a disastrous border war with Ethiopia. And we'll cover this tomorrow. Here we see another article a little further down the time frame that UN concerned at Eurythia restriction of UN overflights. The UN Security Council expressed grave concern at Eurythia's decision to restrict UN helicopter flights over its territory, a move with serious implications for the UN mission there. See, things that are totally taken out of the press that we don't know about. There are white vehicles. There are white helicopters. They have UN on the sides of them. They're in other countries, listeners, taking control of other countries. And that's what peacekeeping is all about. And we're deep involved in it, our military. Let's go to John in Florida. Thank you for waiting, John. I apologize for your wait. Go ahead.
All right, Chris. Thanks for getting me in. Here it is, Ramadan, Rosh Hashanah. To all of our Muslim and Jewish listeners out there, you know, a happy time. But isn't it amazing that these two blood relative Semitic people have a blood feud going on, and we seem to be caught up in it. You know.
Well, and there's links to that with this Oklahoma bombing recent here.
Yeah. Now, that's not why I called, but I was just contemplating it. I want to add, hopefully, to the conversation you've had with some of your callers, the guys from Tennessee and down there in Texas and elsewhere. We're talking about the auxiliary police or reserve officers status and the wannabes, et cetera. There's something else that I became aware of about 97, 98 when I was up in Nashville and went to a gun show. An organization which a younger sibling of mine joined is called the Tennessee Guard. It's a state guard. Okay, it's not the National Guard. This is a bunch of people who are buying their own uniforms and not getting paid. And he, as a prior military, got a commission, so they brought him on board as a captain. And for a few years, he, you know, put out a lot of time and effort to try and get involved. And it seems that he was telling me there's a lot of these organizations in the different states set up. And he sent me some literature that shows that out of Atlanta, there's a headquarters that coordinates sending out stuff. And these are all people who also want to be, you know, wearing a uniform. Many of them have never been in the military or are overweight and are led to believe that they'll be taking home M-16s or, you know, M-60 machine guns from the federal armories.
Really?
Yeah, and called upon to do protective duty at bridges, at, you know, power plants, transmission, you know, sites, you know.
Sounds like they're getting ready for something, John, doesn't
it? And let me tell you, Alex Jones had a guy on about a year and a half ago from Alabama, out of Mobile, who was involved in this. And a lot of the things that my brother told me, as well as what was corroborated by the interview Alex Jones had with this young guy, is these people are all looking to get involved with FEMA. As a matter of fact, there's a college correspondence course my brother was taking from some school, junior college in Maryland, that ties right into FEMA.
John, I appreciate your thoughts.
Thank you.
Very concerned. FEMA, the alternate federal government before Homeland Security. Go tell, go figure, listeners. We'll continue this tomorrow. Same time, same station. Support the network. Vital that you do that. And good afternoon.